The scientists of today are creating the next big thing. On the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast, get an early listen to what tomorrow has in store. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Wednesday, May 24th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Elon Musk is juggling a lot these days. Tesla, Twitter, SpaceX.
Fear is not the mind killer. Context switching is. So switching context is quite painful.
And now he's adding interviewer of presidential candidates? He discussed all that and more at the WSJ's CEO Council Summit. We'll have highlights from his conversation in a moment. But first, the U.S. Surgeon General has warned that social media could pose a profound risk to young people. In an advisory released yesterday, Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy urged policymakers and technology companies to strengthen standards for teens. The advisory pointed to a growing body of research on the detrimental effects of these platforms, though it also acknowledged the benefits social media could have as a creative outlet and for finding community. Our family and tech columnist Julie Jargon says this may not change much for social media companies or users in the short term.
The Surgeon General can recommend actions for public health issues, but he doesn't change laws or make new ones. What he says isn't enforceable unless it's followed up by legislation. So this is mainly guidance for policymakers. The Surgeon General is saying social media can raise mental health risks among children. We've been reporting on this issue for a while, but this is a strong voice showing more needs to be done to address it.
Apple has extended its chip supply deal with Broadcom, which will provide components made in the U.S. The multi-year, multi-billion dollar agreement announced Tuesday comes at a time when Apple is trying to bring more of this kind of work in-house and rely less on China. According to company disclosures, Apple was already sourcing some components from Broadcom that were made in the U.S. I asked our semiconductors reporter, Asa Fitch, why it mattered that the two companies extended their deal.
Well, it matters in two ways. From the Apple perspective and from the Broadcom perspective, it kind of extends the status quo where there had been an inkling that things were potentially changing, where Apple wouldn't really need Broadcom as much in the future. Number two, it's significant because Apple is saying that it's going to have these chips manufactured by Broadcom on U.S. soil. And at a time of rising tensions between China and the U.S., that's significant for Apple. Apple wants to tell people that it's doing more in the U.S., that it's relocating supply chains to make a bigger investment, if you will, in the U.S.
Apple has wanted to make its own chips for some time. Why does it still have to rely on Broadcom for these chips?
It's tough to make these kinds of chips. I don't want to get too technical about it, but they deal with real-world signals. And when you're dealing with real-world signals, things get messy and complicated, and they're difficult to deal with. And it's not just a matter of adding one plus one. There's a lot of art that goes into it. There's a lot of creativity that goes into it. And those things are really hard to just replicate.
Facebook parent Meta plans to sell Giphy to Shutterstock for $53 million in net cash. That's significantly less than the $315 million Meta paid for the GIF maker in 2020. The sale will end a years-long legal battle with the UK's top competition authority, which ordered the social media giant to undo its acquisition of Giphy, saying it would significantly reduce competition in both the UK display ad market and social media generally. All right, coming up, we're going to hear Elon Musk describe how he wants Twitter to approach free speech and how he's dealing with advertisers' concerns. That's after the break.
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
But early detection allowed us to take control of the situation together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Elon Musk often has a lot to say. And he says a lot of it on Twitter. Just one of the companies he owns. At the Wall Street Journal's CEO Council Summit yesterday, he addressed some of the most pressing questions about the platform and the role he hopes it will play in the next election. Here are highlights from his conversation with Thorold Barker, the WSJ's editor for Europe, the Middle East, and Africa.
I'm actually going to start somewhere a little bit differently than I expected, because I just saw on Twitter a little announcement. I see you're interviewing Ron DeSantis, is that right, on Twitter Spaces?
Yes, I will be interviewing Ron DeSantis, and he has quite an announcement to make.
And you've been tweeting some Tim Scott stuff in the last few days.
Yeah.
What should we be thinking about who you're backing?
I'm not at this time planning to endorse any particular candidate, but I am interested in X/Twitter being somewhat of a public town square and where more and more organizations host content and make announcements on Twitter. It's the only place on the internet to really get real-time, like down to the minute and second news.
I look forward to the conversation. So what I wanted to start with, you've just flown in, I think, in the last 20 minutes. You live a pretty hectic lifestyle. What is a day in the life of Elon Musk? What does that look like?
Well, my days are very long and complicated, as you might imagine. There's a great deal of context switching. So there's a meme I like called like Relating to Doom, where it's like fear is not the mind killer, context switching is. So switching context is quite painful. But I do generally try to divide companies so it's predominantly one company on one day. So today is a Tesla day, for example. Although I might end up at Twitter late tonight, and then tomorrow would be partly a Tesla day as well. So time management is extremely difficult.
You're running three very big companies. You have very big stakes and ownership control of two of those at least. What is your succession plan if you suddenly can't execute what you're doing?
Succession is one of the toughest age-old problems. There is no obvious solution. I mean, there are particular individuals identified as that I've told the board, look, if something happens to me unexpectedly, this is my recommendation for taking over.
But it sounds like it's something that you need to get planning of who those people are going to be, because as you've said, when you look at SpaceX, you look at Tesla, you look at Twitter, these matter to society a lot.
Yeah.
And having the right people to take those votes on the future of where they go and where money gets spent is fairly important.
Yes, absolutely. Now, the goals of the companies, the achievement of those goals varies considerably in difficulty. The original goal of Tesla was to accelerate the advent of sustainable energy, which actually I think we've done that to a significant degree, and have actually kind of auto industry CEOs too often acknowledge Tesla's role in accelerating electric vehicles. So that I feel has a lot of momentum. They're still solving self-driving, which we're aspirationally hoping to do this year. So Tesla's got a long way to go, but the execution plan is relatively clear, and that execution plan will generate a lot of positive cash flow for the company. So it's like it's a fairly obvious thing to do. With SpaceX, it's a harder problem because the long-term objective is to make life multiplanetary with a self-sustaining city on Mars, which is likely to be very cash flow negative at first. And very much a long-term, let's just say the target market on Mars is small.
You just hired a new CEO, Linda Yaccarino, an ad veteran into Twitter. Can you just quickly tell us about your courtship? How did that go down?
We had conversations over a number of months just relating to advertising. And then Linda felt that it would be very helpful for the advertisers to see me in person, so invited me down to a conference in Miami, which was very helpful, and met with a number of advertisers personally to assure them that Twitter is a good place to advertise.
Okay. So if you said to Linda that you are going to keep speaking your mind, whatever the commercial impact of that. And has she agreed to that? Is she happy with that? Are you aligned?
Yeah.
Okay. And in her role as CEO, does she have any say over moderation, or is that under you? Or do you do that together?
Well, the general principle is that for any given country, we will try to adhere as closely to the law as possible. There is an important thing, which is like that obviously doesn't mean that, say, advertisers should be forced to appear next to any content. So we've also developed adjacency controls that ensure that if what you're advertising is, like Disney, for example, is a big advertiser. Disney is advertising a children's movie. They want the content nearby to be sort of family friendly. That's totally understandable.
Are you back near profitability now?
Twitter is not quite there, but if we get lucky, we might be cash flow positive next month, but it remains to be seen.
You've created a new AI company. What do you want to do yourself in this space? What is that new thing?
Well, I think there should be a significant third horse in the race here. OpenAI and Microsoft, Google DeepMind, and probably there should be a third horse in the race. So there'll be more on that soon. I don't want to jump the gun here on announcements, but OpenAI has a relationship with Microsoft that seems to work fairly well. So it's possible that xAI and Twitter and Tesla would have something similar.
You've talked about the importance of regulation, and you called for this moratorium. What is the scenario that really keeps you up at night?
I don't think the AI is going to try to destroy all humanity, but it might put us under strict controls.
Isn't the more likely nasty outcome that rather than AI taking over and being the ultimate nanny that keeps us all doing stuff that is super safe and it wants us to, that actually somebody nefariously harnesses that power to achieve societal control, stroke, military superiority, and that actually some country around the world decides to use it in a different way?
Yes, that's what I mean by like AI uses as a weapon.
Right.
And the pen is mightier than the sword. So one of the first places we have to be careful of AI being used is in social media to manipulate public opinion.
So if we take it back to where we started, if you look at the election that's coming up, how big a role will this big shift in AI capability over the last few months, how big an impact is this going to play, do you think, in the messaging and the way that people get told the different pitches of the candidates?
I think that's something we need to be on the lookout for in a big way, is to make sure that we're minimizing the impact of AI manipulation. We're certainly very much taking that seriously at X/Twitter, and I think we're putting in place all of the protections to minimize and certainly detect when we see large-scale manipulation of the system.
Elon Musk, thank you very much for joining us.
All right, that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, head over to our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.